Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this is episode number 157. And today we're going to talk about a documentary called Spinning Plates. Yeah, it's about food, right?
Yes.
It's a foodie documentary.
It is. Yeah. It's my choice, and I feel sure some reason for me to make everybody watch it will show up other than I love it so much. It might be in my top 10 movies.
Wow. Yeah.
It's about three different restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
One is, I can't remember how to say the name, Alinea, which is, at the time I looked up these notes, which was about a year ago, number 7 in the world and number 1 in the U.S. and has 3 Michelin stars. Oh, spoilers. sorry. Another one is Bright Box, which is a family-style restaurant run by a family in Bell City, Iowa, which has a population of 65 and where they serve 800 people a day for lunch.
Wow. Yeah.
And La Cocina de Gabi, which is Francisco and Gabi, who have a Mexican restaurant that they've started in Arizona, and they're trying hard to make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes back and forth looking at all these different restaurants and kind of contrasting and comparing them, but not through any kind of voiceover. It lets you draw your own conclusions based on these people's lives.
Yeah, I found it absolutely amazing. You know, first of all, I loved this film, so thank you very much.
Good.
You recommended it to me probably 1 or 2 years ago, and mm-hmm. I watched it and loved it. And then this was my second watch. And I was amazed. So the director and writer is Joseph Levy.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth did he do this? You know, it's like, you know, these are three really disparate types of restaurants, different kinds of people. And it's like, did he discover this as he went, or did he have this in mind when he started? Would be something I would love to ask him, because it's something like, did you know? It really is remarkable what he sort of uncovered. To me, it was incredible.
Well, I know at the very end, it had a dedication to his father, who would have loved to have eaten at all these restaurants, which I kind of thought said something about his frame of mind. And he, I believe, had a Food Network show for just a little while called, was it called Fire?
Fire.
No, I should have underlined things. Oh, that's Into okay. the Fire.
Into the Fire, okay.
Yeah, and it was a shorter piece, and it was channeled through the Food Network, but it was back in 2003. And when he wanted to do this... Oh, hold on. I'm just scanning my notes now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Sorry.
It's okay.
Dang it. I thought he said at some point why he chose these, but... Well, one thing is, two of these restaurants are famous. Alinea, as I said, very important. A lot of people know of it. I'd never heard of it. But my son-in-law said, oh, it's on his bucket list. He wants to eat there someday.
Yeah.
And Bright Box, in 2009, they received the James Beard American Classics Award.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were known of, especially, you know, if you're bringing that many people in to eat lunch every day and you have a population of 65.
Which is like a tiny, tiny town.
Yeah.
You call it Ball Town or something like that? I mean, tiny.
Bell City.
Okay. Yeah, tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny town. It was like 100 people or something like that. But people come from all over.
Yeah, they've lost people since then. So it's like something? 65 people as of the last census.
Unbelievable.
And yeah. I think he did just come across La Cocina de Gabi.
Hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And just felt like that was the last one. And I think there was a fourth restaurant that he wanted to do, but he said it made too many.
Oh, I see.
To focus. And I don't know if he did a lot of filming there because he just spent a couple weeks with each restaurant. So he did this in 6 weeks.
Amazing.
And then he had to get in because he edited it. He had to get in there and figure out what were the themes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm just amazed by. It is like, you know, like I said, these are three distinctly different kinds of people running restaurants, you know, and yet they all have similarities, right? You know, which we would expect, of course, you know, we're all humans, right? But what he found there was really something. And I really liked his name is Grant, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Ashatz?
I think that's how you say it. I'm not sure either.
Yeah, so he's a really, you know, he's way up there as far as chefs go, right? Because, you know, three Michelin stars and all that stuff. But he's like amazing, right? And and what the kind of things that he was talking about really just made me happy. So he was describing his restaurant at the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, it's absurd.
Yes. Right?
This is absurd. What I'm doing is absurd. And yet, he was obviously joyful.
Yes.
There was something about this absurdity that just pleased him no end. And then he went on to describe how this is art, you know, and what we're doing is an experience. And some of the stuff that he was doing in his restaurant, I mean, it just blew me away. I can't even imagine. I've never eaten at any place I would even say is remotely like that.
That's nuts. But, it was like they'd have a machine where they would run this air over these pine needles so it would capture the scent of the pine needles, and they would pump it into this plastic bag so that then they would put the plate on the bag and serve it to somebody, and it's a clear bag. So that and they poke holes in the bag so that as the weight of the plate very gently pushes down the bag, you have the scent of pine needles coming up.
And the,
or whatever.
And the way he described it was, and the diner is awash or something like that in the scent of pine needles. And I was like, wow, you know? Wow. And he did something with maple leaves where he lit them on fire because it was like a childhood memory of his.
Right.
And he talked about putting himself out there.
Yeah.
He talked about putting himself out there and, you know, like, it's like, you know, this is me or you know, it was just something. It was just something. Yeah. I even wrote down, he said, when he was talking about how absurd it was, he said, five people work 12 hours for one bite.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
It's one of those restaurants where they'll serve you something like 22 courses because they're all one bite or two bites, you know. And when I saw him, I thought, oh, he's more extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But he made me think of Thomas Keller, who has the French Laundry restaurant, since I've read a lot about food and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, that turns out that was his mentor. He worked at his restaurant, and Thomas Keller was the only person outside of someone who worked at these restaurants who was interviewed.
Right, yeah.
Who had a few bits about it.
I know Thomas Keller from Pixar.
Oh, yes, Ratatouille. Because I'm a Pixar fan.
Yeah, Ratatouille. In fact, I'll link to the little video that I liked. It was a DVD extra, Brad Bird. They talked about Brad Bird and Thomas Keller. Anyway, but I won't derail us with that, but I'll just mention that. But that's how I know Thomas Keller from that documentary where he talks about, it was inspiring. You know, he was talking about, you know, what it takes to do what you do and how much work it is. Mm-hmm. And yet there is an extreme love of the work. And one of these diners, one of these restaurants said, you know, this is our life. I think it was one of the Bright Box.
Yeah,
she said, this is not just a job. This is our life.
Right.
And, you know, I don't believe that I've ever heard someone say that and I've really understood it outside of this documentary where this is the second time watching it. I really felt like I understood what she was saying. And that is something that was in common for all three restaurants.
Yes. They were dedicating themselves heart and soul to the restaurants. And what's interesting is they all had ostensibly different reasons for doing it and actually really did have different reasons because obviously Grant, I'll just call him Grant. Mm-hmm. I can't say his last name, is an artist. He is a true artist. Food is the medium he's using. I watched him put together that thing with all the forks and talk about the different bites of food and the progression that you would plan so the flavors would develop as they wanted. And I thought, ah, this is seeing into his mind. Because I have to admit, when I first saw him, I was like, oh my gosh, it's one of those chefs. So artsy, so not pretentious, because this guy never really seems pretentious, except he does have a scarf around his neck all the time. But you just look at him, you go, ugh. And the things he's describing seem so over the top. But as the documentary goes on, he becomes more and more familiar and friendly. And by the end, I was really, he was dear to me. I really liked him. Yeah. And so food in for him is an ephemeral art. It's like fireworks and dance and sand sculptures. It's something that's there for a second to be experienced, and you don't get to take it with you.
Right.
And that's a real unusual kind of an art form, especially to pour yourself into. And then you have the Bright Box, who are not motivated by that at all. They're motivated actually by love of their community and their family history, because they're the seventh generation, I guess, of Bright Box to run this restaurant. And so they show how the locals come in. They have their own keys to the restaurant. So they start gathering before the family's even there, and they've got the coffee on and they're serving it out to each other. And they show, oh gosh, I can't remember the father's name.
I think it was Michael.
Michael, that's it. Michael Breitbach. Thank you. Mm-hmm. He's taking food, bags of food to community members who can't make it there. You know, here's old so-and-so, and he's just not doing so good. So I just dropped this off for him. And so for him, it's all about community. And then Francisco and Gabby, oh my gosh, I love them so much. I especially love Francisco.
Cool.
He loves his wife and his family so much. And he is ready to work his fingers to the bone. And he doesn't mind. He says, I have a beautiful life. You need to do your part. Work hard. And he's smiling the
and
whole
he says,
time.
I will. Yeah, I will do that.
Yeah. And he says, though, he does it because his wife Gabby's cooking is like an angel. He wants to showcase her cooking and make a living from it because that would make her happy. And you find out later, she said she wanted to start the restaurant because he was working so hard and not making enough money, and she wanted to help, and this is how what she could do. So she would be willing to spend her whole life, and that's what she was doing, working in this restaurant, bringing up their little girl there. So they're motivated by love of each other. And wanting to help each other and showcase, you know, this food. And so all three are driving themselves based on very different things. But what the documentarian does is he puts it into this flow, I think, that was really great.
Yeah, I agree. He interweaves their stories, right? He shows one and then two and then three and then one and then two and then three pretty much. And it's remarkable. The reason that I think it's so remarkable, you know, is, you know, it's like, you know, did he come up with this first or did this emerge? But
it emerged.
They really are saying the same thing. What I got out of almost every round of that was this similarity. It's like we are so different, but we're all very much the same. And like you said, there is this different motivation. But yet the chef Grant, he kept saying things that surprised me, that he would say those things about, you know, family. He even talked about his family a little bit and about his father, and, that doing this sort of brought back some of that. And that's what he's trying to do in some of what he does. And then you go to the Bright Box where it's all about the family and, you know, I've met people like that. There was a restaurant, you know, nowhere near that big in the city or the town that I came from, that was a small town, that the only people that cook there are the couple that own the place. And when they leave, it closes. Like go on a vacation, they close it, right? Yeah. And then they come back a month later and they reopens and everybody's like, hooray, you know, because it's just the place, it's the place that people go. But it's all about the family. And like you said, you know, he was motivated by the family history and the community. But I can see, you know, where all the family members are working together in this mm-hmm. one place. I know that the mother, I can't remember what her name was, but she was saying it's not easy. Yes. It's not easy to be this close to everybody all the time.
Right.
Cindy is her name. I see it up in front of me. So, but to have that is a special thing. You know, you're all to work hard as a family and, sort of all be pulling in the same direction. There's something about that that's very appealing.
Well, yeah, and you make a good point about family because I was thinking of Grant, who they don't ever show anywhere except the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I was reading interviews with the director who said, well, I wanted to show him at home, but he lives at his restaurant, essentially. You know, yeah. Everything he does is there, and you realize that really that is his family. You know, he was married. He's now divorced, I think, but he's got two young sons. And he brings them into the kitchen and has them cook with him and everything. But when he's talking it toward the end of the movie, after he's been through a tragedy, it's those people he works with all the time who kept everything going and who he comes back to.
Yeah.
They're family to him.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the stories he tells about family, because he's incorporating all that, because that's his artistic temperament, really. Is kind of have that vision, I think.
Yeah, and then you have Gabby and his name is Francisco.
Francisco. Yeah?
Francisco, mm-hmm. Okay. and they lived at their restaurant, too.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, and then they had a young girl that they would just bring there, and boy, that was tough. You know, I felt tough. I felt bad about that because, you know, what's that poor little girl going to do all day? You know, they showed her misbehaving a little bit, but of course that's going to happen, you know, bored to death, right?
So, right, exactly. She was 3.
Yeah, 3 years old. So that's got to be tough. But yeah, they just worked and worked. And they were the only employees. You know, well, sometimes Gabby's, her mom would come in, right?
Yeah, her mom and her sister would also come. So again, you have the family.
Right, right. But man, a lot of work. Just unbelievable. Yeah. And he says, you know, I'd like to do some deliveries till 2 in the morning. I'm like, what are you going to do that?
We'll do breakfast burritos. And I'm thinking, well, when are you going to sleep?
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
He epitomized the American dream. You know, that's the spirit of people who come to this country and because he was an immigrant and, you know, change things because you can do anything if you can get it to work. They were in a location that had been foreclosed on before from a restaurant. So I feel like it was probably a bad location.
Yeah, probably so.
Which kind of brings up something else, too, though, is you think about, oh, here's a documentary about 3 restaurants, and we've seen this stuff so much. There's the Food Network and everything. This is not the Food Network. This is real people with real lives and real families and real problems. And so when you see Francisco, he's the struggling restaurateur that, you know, what is it? There's a huge percentage of restaurants that start every year and then a bunch of them that go out of business every year. It's one of the highest turnover industries in the country.
Yeah, it's tough to break in, you know, I imagine.
Yeah. And so he's constantly, throughout the documentary, they're always struggling because they've got to get more customers. They're behind on their house payments. You know, so there you're seeing the ones who are, we have a dream. Can we do it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real problem. I mean, because the flow of the documentary and the director said this all kind of came to him as he was working on it. And then also in editing, he could see it. But what you start to see, and the first time through, I was about halfway through when I went, wait a minute, he's showing us the same thing about all these places because it's not obvious at first. And because they're all so different, you're kind of just getting to know everybody. But I've seen it now 4 times. So you've got everybody starts off and you kind of learn the restaurant philosophy And they're just talking as they work. And they're they'll stop and talk to the camera, but it's not like they're talking about any other restaurants. They're just talking about their lives. And then they talk about the work ethic. Then they talk about family. Then a huge disaster happens to every single one of them. And then what comes as the result of fighting that disaster?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. An example of the similarity. Remember Francisco saying when he was making tamales, how the memory of the tamales he was just talking about his memories as a kid of eating tamales.
Mm-hmm.
As he was making the tamales. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the guy, Grant from Alinea, was talking about his memories, and he's lighting maple leaves on this thing, you know. And then the Bright Box, you know, he's walking through cemetery. That was may have been a little bit later, but
it was, but that's the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing. But, they were talking about they have a lineage that you already talked about that and the memories of everybody who's come to the restaurant, and it's really important to them for that reason. So that's really something. And then Grant, the chef, this high class guy, is also talking about comfort food. he talks about how I found this really interesting. How people go to restaurants and they like to be comfortable. Well, that's what Breitbart's is. Breitbox, right?
Right.
That's exactly what they do. They make people comfortable. They make people enjoy the experience, right? And then, but at Alinea, he's like, we try to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, so he's trying to give them a different experience. But, I just thought that was fascinating because I had never thought about it before.
Do you want me to read that quote?
Yeah, please. Have that quote. Yeah, go ahead.
He says, and also, this is really effective because it's in a final voiceover that goes over a melange of all the different restaurants doing the things they do, just being themselves. And you know them by this time. And that's when the filmmaker just brilliantly says, here's what we are, by using Grant's commentary. What we do makes people uncomfortable. You're stripping away all the armor and saying, this is who I am. And that's the same thing those guys are doing. And he means in a diner. They're talking about politics and their wives and kids and exposing themselves. We force that on them. People say, how do you go from a diner to this? It's all the same. You're at the same time making people feel comfortable and exposed. And that's a restaurant.
I love it.
And that's what they're all doing. And, yeah. And they all will struggle together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the struggles come, whether it's, at Alinea, it's the whole restaurant staff who struggles together against the disaster. At Breitbart, it's the entire community and people from far away.
Yeah. That was incredible. I don't know that we need to worry about spoilers in a documentary, but that was incredible.
So the restaurant burns down. And they're like, we're rebuilding. And they're like, they're standing there. The ashes aren't even cold. And some lady comes up and gives them $5 or $5 or something. Says, what's this for? For when you rebuild. And they're like, we hadn't even thought that far.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you have to. Right. So they do it for the community the first time. And then the second time, and then 10 months later, it burns down again.
Which is just unbelievable. Yeah. So the first time it was some kind of an explosion because he talked about people being thrown out the window and things. Yeah. So that was horrible. And then the second time it burned down.
I think
it was overnight. It was in the middle of the night. And I don't know that they know. And they were actually investigated, right? Surely the insurance company is saying, what the heck is going on there? So I'm sure there was a lot of questions. But then they rebuilt it again.
But not until they wrestled with it.
Right.
Especially Michael.
Yep. He had a really difficult time.
Because it's like they went through all the rebuilding and the getting open again, and it's so arduous.
Yeah, and the rebuilding and all the people donating wood, they're donating labor. I mean, the whole town comes and they're putting the walls up, and it's just wow. Just incredible.
Weekends, everything.
Yeah.
They're bringing food. Yeah, exactly.
Incredible.
And so he's struggling with, do I do this again? Do I put everyone through this again? Is it worth it? And it's while walking through the cemetery that he's like, well, I've got, first of all, my family history, and second of all, the community. And they're telling, they're having the community members speak up, and they're all just going, we were so furious, not with the bright box, but with the fact that this isn't fair, this burned down again.
Hmm.
And this matters to us. This is like our heart.
Wow. Just something else.
And what Grant, what happens to him, since we're just talking about it, is he gets tongue cancer of all the things, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone he goes
of all the things that could happen to a chef, yeah. My gosh. Oh, and then that was fascinating too, you know, to go to what you consider the best hospital. They're telling you, well, we really don't have any choice, but this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
And then they go to one last place. And they say, I think we have a chance here to do this. And you come out the other end being able to taste, you know. And he's like, well, let's do that, right? But that, wow, that's something.
Yeah, there was suffering.
Yeah. He thought he was done. I mean, he said at one point that I thought that I was having my last supper. You know, the last time I was going to taste something.
And then he's like, then what do I live for? Because if I can't do this, there's no point in living.
Yeah, he definitely felt that way, which is a shame because, you know, he has kids.
And a wife at that time.
Why aren't they enough? You know what I mean? But I understand, well, you know, this is passion. Yeah. Anyway, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, because then you have Gabby and Francisco. They lose their house. And they're, you know, especially Gabby. You know, you get from what she said about her childhood in Mexico, it sounded like she grew up very poor, and she has all these figurines and they have this nice house and they're having to pack. We're watching them pack up, and that she's being as brave as she can. But, you know, she breaks down sometime. And so that is just ripping their heart out, too. But Francisco and she both keep saying, while we have each other, we're OK.
Yeah.
But it's still so hard. And I'm thinking about it. And of course, from a Catholic point of view, it is those disasters that knock you back on your heels and make you say, almost like Grant, what is the point?
Yeah.
But you gotta
overcome that, right? One of the things that
sometimes we can't overcome it. Sometimes we just, those are the moments actually, and this isn't of course in the documentary at all, but those are the moments as a Catholic where you have to go, oh, maybe this has opened up room for God to come in. Now what happens?
Right. And Breitbach, I think it was Mike Breitbach, said something like, a good thing that came out of a very bad thing.
Yes.
And that's what we hope for.
His daughter getting engaged, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So, but the other good thing that occurred was this community who came together to help rebuild it, they have formed lifelong bonds that they didn't have before, much stronger. Yeah. So something happened between them all that wasn't there before. And who knows what that will lead to. So it's remarkable, you know. Tragedies happen. But I think the best thing that you can hope for is that very thing, you know, a good thing that can come out of a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. When you were pointing out, you were saying you were taking notes and you had one thing that was circled.
Yeah. As I was taking, you know, I was sitting here at my computer watching it because I just got it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just watching it and just little noting things. And then eventually, right in the center of the page, I just wrote the word family and then put a big circle around it. Because that's what it was to me. All of this. It was like, you know, these food memories, you know. And I guess, you know, there are people that you consider family, right? And food is everywhere intertwined with that. You know, not only your daily family that you're with all the time, but you've got Thanksgiving and I have just wonderful memories of Super Bowls. You know, Super Bowl Sunday in my family is a holiday, you know.
Yeah.
Where it was Thanksgiving level holiday all the time, you know, and it was and you have that. And then I remember things like again, in that old town that I used to live at, you know, there was a few years there where we had some friends around us that were so close that on Sunday afternoon, we could find each other at an impromptu barbecue where our families are just at someone's house, and it just having, oh, hey, you know, I've got some steaks in my fridge. I'll go get them, you know, and then, but, you know, just it was all around food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that at some point during this, where Grant was talking about the experience and Francisco is talking about what he felt, and Gabby's talking about how she likes to cook like her mom.
Yes.
And the Bright Box, of course, is the entire huge family. Would they have 7 kids or something?
Yes.
And how it's all tied together in this place, and she's making pie, and she won't let me make the raspberry ones and all this stuff. And then then you have Grant, you know, and he brings his kids in. But he was also at the same time talking about putting himself out there. It's his life. It's his life that he's giving in this art, you know, when he's lighting those maple leaves, which, again, I just need to experience something like that. But he's just like, you know, I remember this smell, and that's what I want people to feel like when they eat this bite of this thing that I created. Just amazing. But yeah, it's all really tied up, isn't it?
Well, and it is. And, you know, that's what you point out is so important because, excuse me, in the world that we live in, people look at food and they treat it like medicine, or they treat it like, you know, oh, I've got to lose weight, so I can't have this food or that food. Or they kind of, the meal dimension often isn't talked about. But it is over a meal that you connect with people in a way that you don't connect any other way. Mm. Whether it's the casual barbecue you're talking about, or going out for a birthday dinner, or making something for somebody that you love, it's and eating it with them. It those are things that they elevate you. I mean, it's just having the meal there, it just elevates the whole thing. And it's not because, oh, this particular food, although if it's traditional, it may be like Thanksgiving, but it's the whole experience. And we're obviously meant to use all our senses in that way. And it elevates everything about our friendship and our love for each other. And, you know, what is that, you know, breaking bread together?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which, of course, again, you've got to say, you don't think of this when you think of having a meal, but of course, that's what the Eucharist is.
Absolutely.
We're all having that meal together. We're all breaking bread together. And how did it start? With Jesus bringing the disciples and having that meal together.
Having a meal, right. Amazing.
Yeah.
Mm.
And there's something so primal, but so it's that thing of food is an ephemeral art, maybe, that idea of it does something to us while we're having that meal. Not every single night, but even then, I mean, I always made sure that we were having meal at the table, especially with the kids. But even now with Tom, you know, we on the weekends will tend to watch a movie while we eat. But that's just like 2 nights a week. The rest of the time, we're sitting down and you wind up talking about stuff that you just wouldn't talk about otherwise.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah, we were eating dinner at the table the other night, you know, both my kids and wife, you know, and sure enough, you know, that we talked about all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? There is just something about it.
Yeah, it's kind of magical.
Hmm.
And one of the things I did like about this documentary is he lets, of course, there's editing, and that's the documentary's point of view. And he was really just showing us, here are the parallels between all these things that we've talked about, and here's the overall point. But the thing I liked is that he told all 3 stories without judgment. He wasn't marginalizing. He wasn't lionizing or patronizing. He wasn't trivializing anything. And I've talked about this movie at a couple different places where I'll do movie talks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always somebody, well, the 2 times, there's been somebody who said, why did Gabby buy all that junk? And I'm like, those are her treasures. You don't ever get that feeling from the documentary.
No.
She's got all these little figurines and all these little things. And they're like, yeah, but she spent her money on that. And why? And I'm like, I imagine because she thought they're beautiful and she never had anything like this. And now she could. why do we buy anything? Mm-hmm. You know, and it kind of hurt me that, and it was also kind of interesting that people were going, well, why did she spend her money like this? You know, because that's the restaurant that's having trouble.
Yeah.
You know, no one's saying, why is that family working together all the time at Bright Box? That can't be healthy.
That's true. I mean,
there are a lot of judgments you could make of all these people.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, why is Grant never with his wife? Why is it, you know, so there's all kinds of things you could say, but the documentary never does that. And so we're encouraged just to look openly and honestly at them because they're, as you mentioned to me before we started, they're giving of their lives by sharing all this with us.
Right. Yeah, they are. Yeah, this is not our job. This is our life.
Right.
Right. And they're all three giving that up. I mean, we're giving that to the work, right? Which is what Keller talked about in that little, and Brad Bird, you know, when he was talking about how much it takes, you know. But he's like, you know, well, you, if you absolutely love it and you're doing it, you know, this is your life. You know, there is no spot at which you walk away from work. You know, that line doesn't exist for these guys.
No, right? Because even when they're not there, remember Grant is talking about going to that museum in London or somewhere with his wife.
Yeah.
And he goes, every picture I saw was food. He was relating it all to what can I do with this?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice insight into his mind. Mm-hmm. You know, he's looking out the window and he sees a tree with berries on it.
Yes.
And he says, now I see red and I see, you know, this, I see that. And what can I do with this? And, you know.
Yeah, that's the real artist.
Yeah, it's amazing.
At a high level.
Amazing.
Well, and the other thing I liked about Thomas Keller in this is he sums up the two lenses that he says, I think, through which each restaurateur looks at the world. And maybe these are questions that he asked Grant. I can't remember right now. Mm-hmm. What is your legacy? And what's the big picture?
What is your legacy and what is the big picture? I really loved part of what he said there. I loved how he said, you know, he doesn't name restaurants after himself because he wants him to continue when he's gone. Right. And that was sort of the lead in to what you said there. I loved that. I said, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I thought that was really great too. Mm-hmm. Especially since that's kind of the question we should all be touching base with every so often, not just a restaurateur.
Yeah.
What is your legacy and what is the big picture in your life?
Right.
You don't have to touch on it too often because we're all living our lives just as busily as these people, just not as focused on one thing.
Right.
So
I love that. Yeah, I'm actually writing that down because I want to I want to remember that. Just a quick note. Because yeah, I do love Keller and I liked that, you know, when Grant went there for the first time to the French Laundry and he said he was looking for the chef and the chef is mopping the floor.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, you want that guy over there.
That's the guy. And he says, you're early, you know?
Yeah.
What a good way to start.
Well, yeah. And it's because what every single thing about that restaurant matters, even if the floor is dirty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Details matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And more for chefs than all of the rest of us, right? but it matters for the rest of us, too. And that's one of the just remarkable things about this is how it, you know, you can look at this and it just, there are things like that that just apply to your life and you know, your own work, you know, what you do, you know.
Details do matter.
Details do
to
matter.
To everyone.
Absolutely.
If you care about what you do, and my husband and I have often said that we're craftsmen, so we're like the Bright Box.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're not like Grant. We're not a high-level designer. But all the details matter. The fact that the mother won't let anyone make those raspberry pies. You know, the fact that she's taught that, I can't remember the daughter's name, but she's the one who gets married and she's her husband or her fiance at that point, you know, learned how to cook in that kitchen. She taught him.
Yeah.
But the details have to be right.
That's right. Yep. That's right. You know, and mm-hmm. wow. Yeah, all those details.
And also the thing is, too, I think this is something that came up for me when, again, with Grant, who generates so many ideas, but the idea of constant evolution. He was always wanting to go forward, and he cooks at one point a simple meal for his business partner. He says, oh, my gosh, this is the best Italian food I've ever had. Why don't you do this? And he goes, well, it's boring to do the same thing all the time. You know, nobody wants that. That's too simple. And he's like, no, everybody would love this. And so what he came up with was a restaurant called Next, where you could flip from France 1906 one month to Thailand another month to childhood another month to the Alps another month. And that not only applies to what Grant wants to do with continually evolving and moving forward, but, you know, of course, then it gives the restaurant patrons who like a very high level idea something always to come and experience.
Yeah.
But we ourselves, and I think it's that idea of what's your legacy and what's the big picture. I don't want to evolve myself as much as Grant wants to evolve everything he's doing, but we have to always move forward. Brightbox is having to move forward. At one point, you hear the daughter saying, you know, if my youngest brother and me could buy out the restaurant for my parents when they're too old and keep it going, I think that'd be the best life ever. So that's both the continuing, but it's the evolution.
Right, right.
And, you know.
So she is evolving, right? It's not like, you know, some people say, well, you gotta move to New York City to evolve, but she is evolving, you know, from to ownership.
Right.
She
was a kid. Probably like Ashley, mm-hmm. Francisco and Gabby's child,
right.
Who probably spent a lot of time in the restaurant, grew up working in the restaurant, now spends all her time there, gets married at the restaurant. Her husband's going to work at the restaurant, be mm-hmm. an owner. And some people, you're right, would say that's the same thing, but it's that constantly moving forward.
Yeah.
If you stop, you know, splashing, you get swept away in the stream. And poor Francisco and Gabby, you know, they lose their restaurant. But the last thing said, they're eager to try again. And when I read an interview with the director, they're like, this guy's a scrapper.
Oh,
and he describes what he went through and getting to this country and getting to where he was. And he's like, he's not going to quit.
Yeah.
No way. Find another way to try again.
I wonder if what they're doing now. How long ago was this? Was this 2012? Did I read that right?
I don't know.
Hold on just a second. Let's see. Yeah. 2012 was the release date. So they probably filmed it in 2011 or something like that. So I wonder what they're doing nowadays or how we would even find out.
Yeah, because we don't know their last names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the Spinning Plates has a website, spinningplatesmovie.com. And it does, it just has a little thing here that says, if you want to help the Martinez family, click here.
Okay.
Which is cool. But I don't know. It doesn't really have any information about, you know, what's going on now for them.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, that's the thing is their lives are having to move on to some next stage that we won't see because we don't all see all this stuff. And will the disaster bring them something new and better? You hope so, but it will bring them something different.
Hmm.
It brings their relationship something different as they struggle through it. It brings, hopefully, them to something they wouldn't have thought of maybe.
Yeah.
Or even if they're having to go back to work, it's maybe at a place they like better. I mean, you know, you hope for the best and you don't know. And you can't love everything that happens because of disaster or change. But change is going to happen no matter what, as we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have to be firmly anchored. Think of Grant. If I can't taste, what's the point of living?
Mm.
And every Christian gets to that point. That's the Garden of Gethsemane point. You know, not as I want will, but as you will.
Right.
But I'd rather not. You know, I would rather please let this cup pass from me. There's nothing wrong with wanting something different, but you have to go forward in the best you can, doing what God wants, which is often just, you know, your work and your family. And I say just, but those are the only things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I also wrote down common denominators, and I wrote down community, and I wrote down family, and then for me, so I had an equal sign, love, because that's what those things are.
Well put. Yep. That is what those things are.
Yeah, and that's how we express it. That goes back to the meal thing, or you know, making cookies for someone, or
yeah, yeah.
Think of Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah, Stranger Than Fiction. Yeah.
Do you remember the scene where the baker makes cookies just for Will Ferrell because she's sorry because she gave him a terrible day?
Right.
That's it.
And I remember him worried about accepting them.
Yes, he did ruin it by offering to pay. But he was also constantly evolving at that point.
He was, yeah. He was. Yeah. What a great movie that is, yeah.
Oh,
if you all haven't seen that, definitely see that.
Yes. We have an episode. Look for
it. Yes. Absolutely. Wow. Yes. Absolutely terrific movie. Yeah. You know, I thought about St. Martha. Mm. Could we talk about St. Martha for just a minute?
I am ready. Talk about St. Martha at a drop of the hat.
Yeah, the drop of the hat.
She is my patron saint.
Yeah, let me read this. You know, and I know that that's true. So I thought I'd read this in context of this film. I think it's really interesting. So this is Luke chapter 10, verse 38. As they continued their journey, he entered a village where a woman whose name was Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat beside the Lord at his feet listening to him speak. Martha, burdened with much serving, came to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help me." The Lord said to her in reply, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her." So there is need of only one thing. That's the bedrock, right?
Right.
That is the what you just talked about. That's the thing that never leaves, that you always have.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because that's often used. The church will often use that in to talk about the contemplative life, where you just pray and you know, in maybe off by yourself or whatever, versus the active life where you're out serving other people. But I've always thought, of course, you know, we both need to be both. Yeah. I mean, we all need to be both. It's that parts of those in your life. But when you're serving, you need to have the other always in mind or as your anchor.
Yeah.
And actually, and it's not in Luke, Martha's story is spread over, she's got three times when she appears in the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's in three different Gospels. And I'll put a link when the post goes up to a long thing that kind of talks about all the stuff that she's in and kind of how it shows her journey of evolution, I think. And because the very last part is when Mary is, it's right before Jesus goes off for the Passion. It's, you know, he's spending the night with them again before he goes off. And Mary, is it the ointment over his head that she does or on his feet? And Judas gets all mad and says, "We could have used that for the poor, could have sold it." But all it says about Martha is, "And Martha served."
Yeah.
So.
And he's not telling her here, you need to stop serving.
No.
He's just telling her, don't be anxious and worry.
Right.
You know, and he's saying, you know, I'm not going to take this away from Mary.
Right.
Right. But he's not saying there is no value in what you're doing. You need to stop it. That's not what he's saying at all.
We all need dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's great value in that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love somebody also who's such a good friend of Jesus that she'll go up to him and go, by the way, Lord. I've got, you know, I'm really backed up in the kitchen and you're just talking and make Mary come and, you know, I've caught her eye a couple times. She's just ignoring me.
That is something else.
Well, it's, you know.
It's true, though. It's, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I take heart from that. Because I'm kind of a back talker myself.
I love it. I don't believe it for a second.
Come
but
on.
I...
Everybody listening to this knows that about me.
Oh, that's too funny.
I've gotten better, but still, it's there.
I got better. That's funny. Oh, cool. Wow. Well, is there anything else we want to talk about this film?
You know, really the only thing I can think to say is every time I watch this, and I've seen it four times, when I'm done, I have the biggest smile on my face. I'm so happy.
That's
great.
It
just makes me happy.
That's great. It does make me happy as well. It makes me eager to get on with my life's work. You know, I get that feeling from this movie where it's like, I need to get busy, you know, and joyously busy. Not like, oh, there are things that I have to do, but it helps me think, you know what? I need to take pride in what I'm doing, and I need to, that's my life's work. And that's one of the things I take away from it.
Wow, that's a nice thing to take away from it.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons I love it. It's great.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah. It is good.
And it hadn't actually occurred to me that way in particular, you know. I mean, but I'm going to think about that now, or remember that now. We should all be that involved in what we do. You know, you should go home.
Yeah, you should go
live
home, right?
Where you work. They're a little too involved.
Right, right.
Also, the next time you go to your favorite restaurant, think about that. That's what the people running it are doing, probably.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of work for sure.
Do you have a favorite food movie?
A favorite food movie? Wow. Well, I can't. Nothing is leaping to mind that I would call a food movie. Well, what would give me an example of a food movie?
I have three examples.
Okay,
they're the ones I thought of. Was Mostly Martha, which we saw.
Oh yeah, I loved that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and Ratatouille.
Yeah. Oh.
Which we've talked about.
I love
that
movie.
Together. Yes.
I love that movie. Yeah.
And Chef.
And Chef is one. It's on my list. Yeah, I must see it.
Yeah, John Favreau's Chef.
Uh-huh.
So those three, where food is a major. Kind of a major character.
Yeah. And I absolutely love Mostly Martha and Ratatouille both. Ratatouille, was probably my introduction to an upper level of food, which I had never really considered in my whole life, really. Other than the only time I've ever been to what I would call a gourmet restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one where you've got like six courses or something like that.
Oh,
very
right,
small things.
Right.
Was in Phoenix one time. A friend took me out to one. I helped him move, and he repaid me by taking me to this restaurant.
How nice.
And it was really incredible. I was like, well, that was, I didn't even know that such a thing existed, you know.
Oh,
but it was
treat.
Something. Yeah, it was something. Since then, I really enjoy MasterChef. But I haven't watched any of the other food shows. There's not a single other food show that I've watched. But again, this is like still my level of foodie. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I like MasterChef also because they don't. Well, I've only seen the one with the kids. I am going to try
Junior.
One with the adults. But it's obviously manipulated.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know,
no
you know, it's manipulative for the audience. The one that I love is the Great British, I can't say.
Oh my gosh.
The Great British Baking Show.
I don't know why I didn't think of that, but yes, I watched most of season one of that, and I haven't finished it yet. Or series one, I guess they call it. But yeah, I really do like that too.
Yeah.
I really,
and that
really
one
do.
Seems more genuine. They let them go home and practice.
Yeah.
They tell them what the showstopper is going to be. So it's not like they're springing things on people. I mean, everybody gets something sprung on them when they do the technical part of it. But it's fair.
Yeah.
And it's not really necessarily pandering to what we expect in America. Well, in fact, it's not at all, which is the sensational or people complaining about each other or, you know, somebody breaking down and crying. In fact, I guess I've seen people cry tears of joy and a few tears of disappointment, but never because of someone else. They'll stop and help each other.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I do enjoy that, but I don't tend to watch I don't have cable, and I don't tend to seek out the Food Network shows because I feel like they're all fairly artificial.
Yeah, and I've never watched any of those.
Yeah, I just don't care about cooking shows, really. This documentary is different.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks again for picking this. It was magnificent.
I'm glad.
I loved the opportunity to watch it.
I'm glad you liked it. And there was more in there than I thought.
Yeah. And now we're going to go, and now for something completely different.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I was trying to think of the last two that I picked were kind of heavy. So I thought, what's the opposite of heavy? And what I came up with was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams.
Douglas Adams is the opposite of heavy.
Yes, he is. So I hope we all have a good time doing that, because it is one of my all-time favorites. I never tire of it. So hopefully everyone will indulge me, and we will just have a light discussion next time.
Oh, yeah.
About Arthur Dent.
As we do.
And Marvin the Paranoid Android. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I actually scored the Stephen Fry audiobook of this because my library happened to have it.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. So if people can listen, I know there's a Douglas Adams one, too.
There is, yeah. But I don't even know that you can get that anywhere. It's something I think I still have it. But yeah, I haven't seen that around for a long time.
Well, and he may be good at reading it. It's a rare author who's a really talented reader also. Neil Gaiman do not come along every day.
That's true. So. But Douglas Adams is one of them.
Oh, he is?
He is magnificent. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have a copy of that.
You bet.
They don't have that at Audible.
That's right.
Or at the library.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure and send you at least some of it so you can hear his voice.
Oh, good. That would be great.
Yeah. Very cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yes, thank you.
I hope you all have a wonderful 2 weeks.
Yes, we'll cook something wonderful for yourself and for your family.
And for your family, right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. I'm going to go get something to eat. We'll see you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye, everybody. Fried chicken for me.
Ooh, heck yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah. I'm going to have a bite of something from Linnea.
You're going to have your pine needle scent coming, right?
Have they got a drive through at Alinea?
Oh, it's their style. Yeah, of course.
Right. All right. We'll see you later, everybody.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.